Today's episode of Expanded Perspectives is sponsored by Gaia.com. Help find your own truth by exploring perspectives you won't find in the mainstream on some of life's biggest mysteries. Whether it's grand conspiracies, breakaway societies, UFOs, ancient civilizations, lost wisdom, as well as the paranormal, all at your fingertips. Stream videos anywhere from your living room or on the go with the Gaia app, available through the App Store or Google Play.
You'll have access to over 7,000 titles, all available to you with a monthly plan for only $9.95 a month. If you sign up now, your first month is only 99 cents. There are multiple plans to choose from, including a three-month plan and an annual plan. Gaia has one-of-a-kind shows like Truth Hunter, Buzzsaw, Cosmic Disclosure, Beyond Belief, Missing Links, Hidden Origins, and Deep Space, Unearthing Nazca, and False Flags.
Gaia is available on your Android or iPhone, Roku, Apple TV, and Amazon Fire TV. If you enjoy expanding your perspective, then you'll enjoy Gaia.com. GAIA.com/expandedperspectives. All one word, GAIA.com/expandedperspectives. What is going on? We're back. It's me, Cam Hale. I survived. I made it back. And as always, punching the buttons over here across the table from me, es mi amigo, Mr. Philly O'Filson. Philly, my friend, what is going on?
How's it going, folks? The boys are back in town. Boys are back in town.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Of the Thin Lizzy song. Right?
Yeah. It's been too long, folks. Yeah. We're here. You're listening to...
You survived.
To Expanded Perspectives. We made it. I didn't die.
I thought I was going to have to hire a new co-host. I really did, because when you were sending those pictures of you about three quarters of a mile off the coast, I was like, he's never coming back.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to start putting out, with Zip Recruiter, a new host for my show.
Yeah.
Right?
It got a little touch and go at one point.
Yeah, tell us about your trip.
Almost had to cut my underwear off. Got real scared. everything was great. We had a wonderful trip. The drive down was fun. Beautiful weather. I mean, everything was a wonderful trip. At one point, I went offshore. And those of you that follow on Instagram and follow on Facebook, you saw it. And I'm offshore. We're fishing. My son and I are. And I'm sitting in my kayak floating. It's long ways offshore. Like Kyle said, about three quarters of a mile offshore. And I'm not paying much attention to what's going on. You're just kind of absorbing what's happening, right? I've been trolling this bait fish, little hardtail back in there behind me. He's just, and I'm just chilling. And I catch movement out of the corner of my eye.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, this morning we've already seen jellyfish and a big giant sea turtle and all kinds of stuff. It's awesome, man. The dolphins have been at it. It's just great. I catch movement to my left, and I posted this on Instagram just right after it happened, so y'all can go and watch my expression of how this whole thing went down. I look down in the water, and it doesn't seem very deep. Like, it really does look like it's just a couple feet below me. There was a 5-foot shark that swam right under my kayak, right where I was, between my feet and my butt, right underneath the kayak right there. I don't know what kind it was, except it was alive.
I saw your post on Instagram, and of course I called you. And I was like, do you know what kind it was? And you're like, the kind with teeth. That's all I need to know. I'm not identifying species. Yeah. It's a shark.
What I look like. Yeah.
And then you said it kind of was following you. Wouldn't leave you alone for a little while?
It kind of hung out for a while. It stayed relatively close. Like, I think it was curious as to what was even going on. You know what I mean? Because yeah. I was down from the pier, from the Navarre pier, a pretty good ways from it. But I think this shark was, and of course, they catch shark off the pier like crazy. I talked to some guys during that whole thing. But yeah, he passed under me, and I thought nothing of it after that besides sitting there like, I'm like, you know, like, what am I going to do? And, you know, and it just turned into a big sissy. But it was after all that that he came. He just kind of hung out for a little while. You could still see him. He wasn't super close,
right?
But you could still see him out there, the whole thing. And then we ended up playing some disc golf and made two buddies, two of the locals down there. Todd and Robbie invited Brandon and I to go play disc golf with them. And it was great fun. That's the greatest thing about disc golf, too. I think everybody's so nice. And Brandon and I was getting ready to play. And Todd's like, hey, y'all want to play with us? We're like, yeah, sure, great. So we all jumped in and all played. It was a great trip. But I've missed coming back and getting to chat with everybody and just all the madness that was going on. And we have a bunch of wild and wacky stories, man, of stuff that happened to us. And like we were going to stop and eat when we had stayed the night there in Mississippi on the trip down, and we were going to get up and go eat. So I'm like, all right, we'll park right here. So I couldn't really get by the little restaurant, so I had to park in this little parking lot there beside it. And I got ready to do, and this homeless guy comes walking up, and it's like literally 8 o'clock in the morning, and he has got two paper sacks plumb full. He's got 40s in each paper sack, okay? And he's drinking both. Like, he's got the lids off of each one.
Binge drinking.
Two fisting 40s in paper bags at 8 a.m. And he's wearing like blue dickies and a wife beater, like a white tank top. And he's cursing and yelling at his friend while he's walking. Okay. But there's no friend.
It's his imaginary friend.
It's his imaginary friend. And that's what he's going off at. And I'm like, man, I'm in Mississippi. This is Mississippi man. I'm not even close to Florida man yet. Mississippi man. So I'm like, I'm not parking here, bro. I'm like, we're out. Told the family, I'm like, get in. We're going to roll them up. We're going on further down the road. So they got in. We went on further down the road before we stopped to get something to eat. But yeah, we had a great time. I hope everybody else had a great week. I hope you enjoyed listening to me and Philly get to chat with Micah. We had a wonderful time talking to him. And like we said, it's one of those deals that we could have kept going. The what you heard of us doing on the Elite Show and on the Monday Show was a part of what we did. We had to cut it short because we get on there with Micah, and y'all know as well as anybody, it goes on for hours. It's a beating. So without any further ado, yeah, let's go ahead and jump into some news. And I'm not going to let y'all down. I know I haven't been here in a while, folks. I'm going to talk about the website Cryptozoology News.
Here we go again.
Got to make a little money here. All right. Colorado man. This is not Florida man. This is Colorado man. I'm not guessing that he's stoned, but it says Colorado man reports two Bigfoot sightings. This is from Conifer, Colorado. A plant manager in Colorado claims this, that he saw two gorilla-like creatures. The fella's name is Tony Piratelli. He's 54 years old. And he provided a series of pictures and video that contains tracks of this alleged primate. Now, it says that the sightings took place inside his family property. Would you quit tearing up your new tablet?
Sorry, there's like a piece of plastic like, that's interfering.
He's just like a... I'm going to get you a pet monkey so y'all can just pick at one another this whole time. Now, this is what Tony had to say. I was taking the dogs, who were very frightened, to do their business that night. Said it started with the early January footprints, and then a few months later, I noticed something at 2 in the morning. Now, he's talking about he's taking them out, and that's, I guess, walking the dogs. That's when he sees all this. But he says the first time he encountered this creature, he reportedly spotted a pair of what he said was white eyes and then a clear outline of a primate against the moonlight. He says it was a large gorilla-type creature staring right at me 200 feet away. Mm. I was at the porch of my house, which was on a small hill, and the moon was shining behind it. And where it stood there, we were staring at each other for what seemed a long time. But it was more like 5 to 10 minutes. Well, that seems like a long time to me if you're going to stand out there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Long enough. Now, he goes on to add that even though he felt frozen with fear, he was also very intrigued by it. And then he explained that he walked back to the house and he got his dad, his father. And said by the time they come back, this creature had left. Now, he did say this, that he describes it as a large gorilla, bipedal large gorilla. But he said, but it was not an ape. So you're like, well, what are you talking about? He said it had facial outline features, like a mixture between a gorilla, like the neck, he said. Right. And he says the arms are massive, and it was sitting on its hind legs like it was ready to move. Now, according says to this fella here. A few months later, he encountered a smaller version of what he'd seen before. He said it seemed curious, but it never got any closer than about 75 feet, and it stayed out amongst the trees where it could hide itself. So he had actually taken some pictures of this thing, and he said it even had smaller feet. He said one seemed to be an adult, the other younger, showing what may look like a small family pack on this photograph deal. So if you go there and you start looking, you can see these footprints. And there's even footprints in the snow and all that. But the trouble with footprints in the snow, like we always talk about, is it could be a footprint that's thawed overnight, which is kind of what this looks like maybe, caused this footprint to recede, things like that. What is odd is there is one of the footprints that he has his boot in the footprint where he's stepping beside it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see that, it has got a very odd shape to the foot. Like the bend, like if it's your right foot and you're looking down, the way it bends on the inside left part of your right foot is a very distinct bend to it. You know, it's where you can, it almost feels like Bigfoot-esque. Like instead of it being a long flat foot, it's a very curved primate.
I'm looking at it now,
foot.
Yeah.
You follow me?
I see it.
Now, there's no distinct, you can try to make out toe marks, but maybe or maybe not. You know, I don't know. It could easily be a bear track. With the larger bear track in the front and the hind leg stepping in the back to make it appear that way.
Yeah.
Those
what do they
have
call
been
that
done.
Where it's like double stepped.
Yeah. Something like it could easily be that. But nothing explains the fact that he's. Now, what's odd is this. He doesn't bring up the fact of how tall it was. He's not saying 7 or 8 footers. Okay. He's not saying anything like that. He's not saying that it's, you know, 6, 7, 8 foot. None of this. He just says that it looks like a large gorilla, but it wasn't an ape. So this very easily could have been some juveniles. You know, or it could have been a smaller female with a baby or, you know, who knows what it could have been. But it was very interesting. I like the idea that he's seen it multiple times, a large one and a small one. So I thought that was pretty cool. So, folks, check out these photos, cryptozoologynews.com.
Well, if that doesn't frighten you, this will. And a terrifying new advance for machine kind. Robots are now able to heal themselves.
Yay.
That's right. It says the human-like abilities of robots continue to develop at an incredible pace, with droids now being seen to chase targets and even fire machine guns. But now, scientists have taken the potential for human-like resemblance to the next level, Cam, with the creation of an artificial self-healing skin. Scientists at a university in Brussels have managed to give robots, Cam, self-healing properties, which allow them to recover even if they are stabbed or gashed with a knife. The development invokes visions of Arnold Schwarzenegger as the cyborg in our favorite movie, you know, the Terminator. Now, it says, for now, they're more likely to be found grabbing fruit, vegetables, and soft products off factory floors. They could also play an important role in creating human-like prosthetics. But they say to create these flesh-like robots, the scientists used a jelly-like polymer that melds together with others when heated or cooled. And when present in a grip or a robotic hand and an artificial muscle, they were able to damage all three without even leaving any weak spots. Now, a professor at the Brubotics in Flanders says the outcome of the research opens up a promising perspective. Robots can not only be made lighter and safe, they will also be able to work longer independently without requiring constant repairs. Killer robots might seem like a long time away from becoming reality, but experts have raised concerns that these able to build these super strong armies of the future. Now, a guy named Peter Singer, who's a strategist for the New American Foundation, said the U.S. military needs to brace for this battle against killer machines. It's going to happen. He thinks that there'll be developments of cyborg squads of fighters probably within the next decade. So,
awesome.
The guys are saying that they're building these self-healing robots so they can work in factories longer and they won't need to be repaired as often. So if they bump into something, something gets cut, it self-heals itself. But you and I, you know
what they're saying.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. They're teaching these things how to fire machine guns. Yeah. You could stab it with knives. Just keeps on coming.
Yeah. You sure they are? Yeah, but we need somebody to constantly work this press or work this screw gun. Yeah. So you got to make it where it's self-healing skin. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
It's a T-1000. Awesome. Isn't that the model, the T-1000?
Yeah, thanks.
The liquid guy that would just...
That would just what?
Heal itself instantly? Because remember the T-100, you can actually, like, if you burn his skin off, it doesn't fix itself.
Yeah.
Arnold's face is like half burned off.
That's that red eye staring in there.
Yeah. The T-1000.
Why am I staring into my microphone?
No.
Y'all missed it. He's laughing because I said I'm staring in it, and I've got my left eye pressed up to my microphone right now like I'm looking at it. I'm dialing it in.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, I mean, what is going on with these robots?
Stop. Enough's already.
Within the decade.
Yeah,
just, armies of robots.
I got y'all something to work. You want to have something self-healing? Why don't you self-heal people's phone screens? So if you break a phone screen or a television screen or a windshield in the car, why don't y'all worry about self-healing that? Why don't we not self-heal robots, huh? How about that? You scratch the watch face, crack your windshield, scuff a mirror, something along those lines. Why don't we do something like that instead of these robots with the growing back skin? I ain't down with that at all.
No.
Not at all. I'll tell you something else I'm not down with, homie, and you're not going to be down with. Our homie Lon posted this at Phantoms and Monsters. Apparently, the Mothman still roams McClintock Wildlife Preserve.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Going along with all the stuff that's been going on in Chicago, a lot, a whole lot. My niece that's up there, I've been talking to her about it. She's been digging around in there and stuff. She actually was staying, you know, like I said, a few places from it, this whole thing. So I've had her going back and forth with me about what's going on up there. But you're going to like this. This actually come from a YouTube comment on one of the videos I posted. It says this. I actually live about 35 minutes from Point Pleasant, West Virginia, in a little town called Ripley. I have friends in Point that have had some pretty messed up encounters driving through the McClintock Wildlife Preserve. That's where the area that they call TNT is located. There are these old ammunition storage bunkers that look like giant igloos and some old, worn down, and deserted factories.
Mm-hmm.
Says, talk about one hell of a creepy ass place. My buddy Brian said he and two friends were out there back in 2002 driving around the maze of back roads when they heard something hit the roof of the truck. And when they looked out the back glass, they could see what looked like a person hang gliding behind them. It was very dark, and they could only make out the outline. Now, he said it followed them and kept hitting the roof for about a mile. They were losing their minds with fear the whole time. The thing was keeping up with them, even when they were doing 70 plus in a couple of spots.
Oof.
Now, he said he'll never forget that night, and I know he wouldn't make something up like that. He goes on to say that he's a very devoted Christian and a churchgoer. Is what he, I don't know what that means. Is it why you wouldn't make stuff? You go to church, you can't lie, I guess. I don't know. What do I know? But apparently, that's what this guy thinks. But so anyway, they're driving around out there and get landed on by what they say seems like a person hang gliding. But it's so that it still goes back into the wings. Now, why it would land on the truck, something like that, is anybody's guess. So while looking into that, there was another YouTube comment y'all are going to enjoy about this. A Western Kentucky gargoyle. Now, remember we discussed some gargoyles not long ago.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that.
This guy posts, says, I have a friend that's a hunter and an outdoorsman that was in the woods in the middle of the night that swears that he saw a gargoyle-like creature on a branch in a tree. Now, he didn't say gargoyle, but what he described was a large-winged, almost goblin-like thing that was 7 feet tall. Now, he said that when it moved from the branch, it rattled the whole tree and it was gone in an instant. Now, this is in Western Kentucky, so there's a lot of strange cryptid sightings, and I have no reason to doubt him. He goes on to say that my father's family lives in Western Kentucky, too. And about 13 years ago, my family and I saw a wolf-like creature with yellow eyes cross the road. And this was after we crossed the state line, so we were in Tennessee, technically, when we saw it. So what is the deal? Now, we had DW come on, and we talked about Dog Man, and everybody seemed to truly enjoy that whole thing as much as we enjoyed, you know, doing it. And we had talked about why it seems to be it seems like more sightings of these dogmen. They're getting to be more commonplace. Then Lon starts reporting on these sightings of this creature in Chicago. And it's starting to pop up with more and more people having these encounters and more, some even new, some old, but it's like, now we're having more and more of these Mothman, gargoyle, like cryptid, phantom, whatever it is, flying things. You would think that would be easier to find now than Dogman. Like, you know, there's no place to hide in the sky. You know, if you're a big flying creature and you look up, you're like, oh, yeah, there it is. But it doesn't seem to be that's what's going on. It seems like I would think it would be easier to hide probably in Chicago. I mean, you whip around and dart in behind some buildings in the middle of the night, flying especially, you're going to lose track of whatever it is. What are they seeing in town? Because you could kind of say, oh, it's a giant bird, or is somebody, you know, mistaken the buzzard for it, something along those lines. You could, you know, but what are you going to mistaken for this in Chicago? Or even he's talking about a 7 foot tall leathery goblin. Like, these aren't things that you just misidentify.
I have no idea. And I want to know why the frequency. Like, why now?
Yeah,
2017, exactly. Are so many of these things being seen?
Just popping up. I don't understand it at all.
Man.
I don't get it.
That is creepy. Well, let's take a break, folks. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about some truly disturbing stories that I've found on the internet, as well as a few have been sent in from our listeners. Let's take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. This story of mine took place when I was around 10 years old. My mom had a rather quickly filed divorce between her and my father. So she only had a part-time job and made very little money. So, finding a place to stay that was affordable and available immediately was tough. A friend of hers told her that she and her husband had a little mobile home that was currently just sitting empty, and we could rent it for practically free till we figured something else out. I immediately didn't like the house. Part of this, I'm sure, was due to my parents' abrupt divorce and having my life turned upside down, but it was also just the house itself. You see, we lived in a mountain town, and this mobile home was way up a steep mile-long driveway. Beautiful pine trees surrounded it, but the house itself looked abandoned and out of place. It had two bedrooms and two bathrooms. So, my brother and I shared a room, and my mom took the bedroom with the attached bathroom. It was a very 1970s-style home, with wood paneling and dated fixtures. There were also areas that showed some strange damage, like holes in the wall that were badly patched up. For whatever reason, I immediately refused to use the hallway bathroom. I wouldn't even step into it. Even walking by it always made me feel uncomfortable. My mom never really asked me why or questioned it, but she let me use her bathroom. Anyway, my mom was gone a lot, trying to find whatever work she could, so I would be home alone a lot after school and on the weekends. And that is the times something strange began to happen. My mom always told us when we were at home alone never to answer the door, but we should always answer the phone in case it was her. So, when the phone rang one afternoon, I figured it would be my mom since no one else really had our number yet. There was a woman on the phone who sounded very concerned. "Hello, this is 911, returning your phone call. We received your call, but we got disconnected." That's what the woman said. I immediately got a sick feeling. I told her that I didn't call 911, and she asked me if there was anyone else in the house who might have called. I said, "Oh, I'm home alone." But then I started to really get worried that maybe I wasn't. She said she would dispatch police to our address just to make sure everything was okay. At that point, I was terrified to be in the house, so I sat outside and nervously waited for the police, who showed up in about 15 to 20 minutes. The officer asked me, "Did you call 911? And I said, "No." But they claimed I had called them. The officer just sort of shrugged and said, "This kind of thing sometimes happens. They say that it can't, that the numbers can't get mixed up, but trust me, it happens." He did a cursory glance around the outside of the house and then left. I tried to convince myself that the officer was probably right. It was just a mix-up, some kind of mixed-up phone call. and hopefully whoever did actually call got the help that they needed. Well, I kind of forgot about it after that, and about a month later, the same thing happened. I got another phone call from 911, saying they had received a phone call from my number. I told them again that it must have been a mistake. The woman on the phone scolded me a bit, telling me that 911 wasn't something to play around with, and I was preventing people from getting real help. She didn't dispatch any police this time. Again, I was really worried someone was in the house. So, I cautiously checked and made sure all of the doors were still locked. I don't know why, but I always kept the hallway bathroom door closed, maybe because of the eerie feeling I got from it. As I was checking the house, I just knew someone was in that bathroom. I was terrified. Part of me felt like I needed to open the door to check. You know, maybe to prove myself wrong. But I was too afraid. So, I just sat in the living room, watching the door. It was so quiet in the house that after a few minutes, I swore I started to hear faint little sounds coming from inside, like a kind of shuffling noise. I asked my mom to check the bathroom when she got home from work, and she quickly looked inside. She even made me come to look and see that it was empty, and I was letting my imagination get the better of me. The 911 calls happened 3 more times over the coming months, and only when I was home alone. The 4th time, the dispatcher told me I could face criminal charges for what I was doing, and they would contact my parents. I hung up the phone sobbing and feeling terrified. I had that feeling again, like someone was in the house. But if I called 911 now, they probably wouldn't even show up. I kind of felt like the girl who cried wolf, only it wasn't me. It was like someone was playing a horrible, twisted joke on me. I sat and watched the bathroom door again, hearing noises, like someone dragging their fingers across the door. I decided my mom was probably right, and I was probably just letting my imagination get away. I decided to try and leave the bathroom door open so I wouldn't get so freaked out by the thought that someone was in there. Then, I got the 5th 911 call. This time, though, after I hung up the phone with the dispatcher, the bathroom door slammed shut. I ran all the way down our steep driveway and found a place to wait till my mom pulled into the driveway. When she arrived, she was angry with me for leaving the house, but she saw how upset I was. I think maybe she thought I was acting out due to the stress of the divorce. I refused to be alone in the house again, though, so we worked it out so I would stay later at school or go to a nearby friend's house, whatever, until she got off work. Well, not long after this, we got a notice from my mom's friend that we needed to move out of the house because her mom needed a place to stay. I was so grateful to be moving out. I told my mom, "You need to tell your friend that something was wrong with the house." But my mom thought that was ridiculous. There was no way to pay back someone's generosity. I moved around a lot for the next few years, and I tried to forget about that house. It wasn't until I was older that I really started to think about it. I witnessed an accident and had to call 911, and the fear and paranoia all came flooding back. I decided to do some research, which, honestly, I wished I had never done. Apparently, a few years before we moved in, a woman was killed in that house in some kind of domestic dispute. It was days before she was found. She was found shut up in the hallway bathroom. My husband and I live in a small, unincorporated town on the outskirts of a bigger city. Although we are almost 50 years old, we are 30 to 40 years younger than any of our near neighbors. Most of them have grandchildren who visit regularly and drive them wherever they need to go. Not so for the man I usually just called Professor. His wife, Elena, died 12 years ago. I only knew her briefly, but she and the professor were one of those life goals kinds of people. I loved spending time with them. They were both so knowledgeable and witty, and clearly still deeply in love. Elena's passing hit her husband hard. For the last year, he had been battling cancer. With no bus service in our rural area, and cabs from town were very expensive, I ended up driving him to his doctor's appointments. The professor had been in the United States since his 20s, but he still retained a charming foreign accent. My name, he pronounced as Aune. Usually when he phoned me, he would say, "Good afternoon, Aune." Sometimes, he would call in the wee hours, in pain, only able to gasp, "Aune." I would drop the phone, run to his house to help him with his meds or to take him to the city's emergency room. He was adamant about not staying away from home. He knew the end was near, and he wanted to go to his own bed. On October 1st, at almost 4 a.m., my cell phone rang, showing the professor's number. When I answered, a strange voice asked, "Aune?" "Yes," I answered. "Professor?" "No," the voice giggled. "This is Maria. I'm taking him tonight." Then I woke up. I was sitting up in bed with the phone in my hand. My husband and our dog were sleeping soundly. So, the phone hadn't really rung. Or had it? I started to call the professor, but if he was managing to get some sleep, I didn't want to disturb him, especially because of just having a bad dream. So I got up and dressed quietly, and the dog and I slipped out into the backyard. I could see the professor's house from there. No lights were on, and everything was quiet. I wasn't comfortable, though, so I went ahead and dialed. 25 rings. No answer. Damn. I knew then. I went back in and woke up my husband. We walked to the house and knocked. Nothing. We had to phone the police and the sheriff's department. When they finally arrived, there was still no answer at the door. So, they broke in. I led them to the professor's bedroom, and there he was, still in his bed. The professor had died, seemingly peaceful, in the middle of his sleep. Now, because of our unincorporated location, many of the chores which would fall to professionals in an urban area are taken up by neighbors here. So, that evening with the deputy's supervision, the families on our block began to sort through the professor's papers. We needed the deed to his burial plot and any kind of will or link to any distant relatives. I looked through a small scrapbook of old photos and another box that was on his nightstand. There was no cousin Marco from the old country or nephew Bob in New York City. It was mostly pictures of Elena and the professor. Then, I began to find a few pictures of them as a young couple, and a few of these pictures showed them with a baby girl. They had never mentioned to me, in all the time that I knew them, that they had a daughter. There were more pictures of the little girl as she grew older. Pictures of them on family vacations, her and the Girl Scouts, and then later what looked like a middle school band. Then, high school senior pictures. And there was even a picture of her in college at the University of Miami, Ohio. I couldn't find any more pictures after that, but during my searching around, I found an old newspaper clipping from 1971. In the article, it described the death of a young girl who was on vacation in Oaxaca, Mexico. Apparently, the young girl had fallen off a cliff while out hiking. Perhaps this is why they never mentioned her to me. It was just too painful. As I finished reading the article, it mentioned her name, Maria. I was shocked, and to this day, although I have never met her, I do believe I spoke to her. About 5 years ago, my husband Adam and I decided that it was finally time to start looking to purchase a home. We had always talked about buying an older, fixer-upper home because we've had the idea that they hold more charm and have more character. Plus, we can appreciate a place that has its own quirks, and we love the thought of turning something run down into something beautiful again. But that being said, I grew up in a pretty rural farming town in Indiana that had more than its fair share of run-down houses. The surrounding areas had started to boom a little bit, with farmland being sold off and turned into new factory locations, along with several new subdivisions for the people coming to work for them. I thought it'd be a great place to start on our own house. So, let's begin hunting. I figured we'd be a lot closer to civilization than I used to be growing up on, but not so much that we'd be living a stone's throw away from our neighbors. Adam and I decided to take a drive one summer, Sunday afternoon, so I could show him some of the back roads of my hometown, and also to see what some of the properties we checked out online looked like in person. As we were turning off the main road, through town, and further onto a more secluded country road, we noticed that the very first house on the left was completely abandoned. We pulled into a small patch of the yard where the grass was the shortest and where a gravel driveway used to be, to further investigate. It was painted a deep green color, which made it almost invisible against the tall grass. Sticker bushes and weeds had grown up all around it. There was a massive tree in the front yard whose branches and leaves helped to camouflage this place even further. The house looked as if it were at least 100 years old. It looked like it sat empty for a while. It looked neglected, weather-worn, and in need of major love. In that moment, it was perfect. There was nothing but woods across the street and no neighboring houses in sight. So, Adam and I thought it probably wouldn't hurt if we just trespassed a little. I completely justified my reasoning by thinking, well, we're interested in buying the property, and we're not here to cause trouble. We're doing someone else a favor. We could take this burden of a house off someone else's hands. We just need to take a look around first, that's all. Plus, there weren't any no trespassing signs anywhere, so I was perfectly armed with my newfound inflated ignorance and arrogance to assess this property. We began by walking carefully through the brush towards the left sides of the house, where we noticed a well that was still standing, complete with bucket, rope, handle, and the original overhang. My excitement for a picturesque country house was starting to build. Directly across from the well, there was a side entrance into the house through what looked like an added-on mudroom. The screen door to the mudroom was closed. However, there was a wooden door behind it that was half open. This was our not really intrusive because we aren't breaking anything to get in way in. It was probably in the mid-90s outside that day. So, when we entered, Adam first, we were met with thick, stifling heat, the kind that holds so much humidity that it almost takes your breath away. What we thought was a mudroom was actually an extended pantry area or canning kitchen. It was tiny, with one window, an old rusted sink, a small stove, and the walls still held shelves upon shelves of canned and spoiled vegetables in jars. I remember thinking, oh yeah, this will be great. I totally remember how to can, and we can can, and we can have a garden. It'll all be perfect. It also had the doorway into the main part of the house, and this is where my elation came to an end. Through the doorway was the kitchen. What remained of the cabinets and sink were against the wall on the left, but they were either broken or hanging on for dear life, or both. The kitchen connected to a wide open living area, with one side having walls streaked with black that led up to a half-sunken gray ceiling. There had been a fire at some point. The windows on that wall were filthy, covered in dust or ash that made the room much darker than it should have been during that part of the day. My heart sank. I knew we wouldn't be able to afford a costly repair of a house fire, but I kept that disappointing thought to myself. The open living area had not one stitch of furniture, save for one small wooden rocking horse that a child would have. The floor was littered with magazines, as if someone had a giant stack of them and just threw them up in the air to see where they'd land. Curious as to what the former homeowners liked in regards to reading material, I decided to check them out. Almost every single magazine was related to dolls in some way. Porcelain doll collecting, Barbie dolls, making dolls by hand, clothing for dolls. I felt a little creeped out by it, especially under the surveillance of the rocking horse's dead, painted-on stare. But I figured that an old lady must have lived in the house before. And I created a self-medicating idea that her husband probably died and this was her only hobby that she had she used to probably pass her time. We decided to check out another room that was connected to the half-burned living area. Through the doorway on the left was a weird combination of a molded stand-up shower with handicap handles and assisted toilet. Next to it, divided down the middle by a wall. On the right was a wall made entirely of built-in bookshelves. The shelves were full of paperwork, manila envelopes, books, and even more magazines. It struck us pretty weird, but these people must have really loved to read while sitting on the toilet. My husband and I thought we could find out who the previous homeowners were, since some of the paperwork on top of the stacks seemed to be old bills. If we wanted to look up the property records, at least now we would have a name to go on. I grabbed a stack of papers and began to flip through them, when about halfway through, they changed from being old telephone bills to printed out color pictures from the internet of porcelain dolls. I put the stack of papers back on the shelf and picked up a small red 5-star notebook. I started from the beginning, casually leafing through and seeing daily entries of medications taken, blood pressure and glucose measurements written in neat handwriting. About 20 pages into the entries, started to change entirely. They became crude drawings of twisted faces, done in red ink. The faces had horns or bloody fangs. Then, full-on drawings of devils appeared in the pages after. I wanted to believe that a child had picked this up to doodle in, but I felt this was something much different than that. After the drawings, the notebook became someone's personal journal, written in what I assumed was an elderly man's cursive. It told of how he knew he was coming towards the end of his life, and how he remembered being just a young boy when his mother passed away. He described in detail how the wake for his mother was held in the front room of his home, and how during those nights, he crawled on top of his mother's body in her coffin in order to sleep. I couldn't believe what I was reading. Even though I had been sweating from the thickness in the air, a sudden rush of goosebumps came over me. I immediately showed it to Adam, flipping to the pages of devils and snarled faces, and then read aloud the stranger's memories of his mother just to see if it was the same the second time out. After I finished, he said, "Well, this just got a whole lot weirder." Nodding to what he held in his hands, while I was reading the notebook, he had continued rifling through the mountains of papers. One stack not only had more printed pictures of dolls, but now they contained pictures of real women in torture bondage, ball gags or electrical tape placed over their mouths, jumper cables twisting their nipples, being hogtied with rope. Sometimes there was more than one woman in the picture. It felt as if a brick had been tossed into my stomach. For some, those images wouldn't be disturbing, but in the context of our visit, my panic was starting to grow. I was torn between wanting to find out more and getting the hell out of there. Adam reassured me that while it was on the creepy side, it wasn't anything necessarily to lose my wits over, since the wind didn't seem to be suffering or bleeding. The burned-out living area was separated from the rest of the house by a staircase. The staircase had a room directly across from it and a small hallway on the other side that led to the main room at the front of the house. We debated on going up to the second floor, but decided against it, since it already felt as if we were roasting in an oven and we were unsure of the stability of the second story. Going into the room across the staircase, we noticed a few more doll magazines on the floor, but not near the number as in the other rooms. There were scattered plastic doll pieces here and there, random arms and heads, and to the left was the original fireplace with a couple of tiny vases on the mantle. Smack dab in the middle was a framed picture of an elderly couple, smiling and happy. These certainly weren't the type of people that would have pictures of women bound and gagged, hidden away in their bathroom. These people could have been my grandparents, I thought to myself. To the right was a big bay window, and smack dab in the middle was a yellowed piece of paper with faded black printing handwritten on it. It was for anyone on the outside of the house to see. Before it became overgrown, reading it backwards from inside, it said, "If you're here to talk about Jesus, go away." "That's kind of hilarious," Adam said after reading it for himself. "Yeah, I guess it kind of is," I half chuckled. But something in my brain was now starting to nag at me even more. Something wasn't computing correctly for me. Thinking back, my mind was putting together that an elderly couple in this town would more than likely be pretty religious. And by the super small chance that they weren't, it would have been gossiped about had someone seen that in the window. It was as if the house had held two very different personalities within it. I told my husband that I just wanted to go into one of the last rooms downstairs, a little bit down the hallway, and then I would be very ready to leave. Well, going down the small hallway, it became darker and cooler. It was a relief from the oppressive heat that we had been dealing with since first stepping inside. The shade from the giant tree in the front yard had blocked out a lot of the sunlight, making it about 20 degrees cooler. But we soon realized that it wasn't the only reason this part of the house's temperature was much more tolerable. Rounding the corner into the last room, it took a few seconds for our eyes to adjust to the difference in light, but the change of air was noticeable immediately. It was as if we had stepped into a cave. The smell was dank and left a dampness on our skin. Once things came into clear focus, that's when we saw it. The main reason our senses had shifted so quickly, the large hole in the floor. At first, we thought that perhaps the wooden floor was so weak that it had simply caved in on its own, or that the roof had leaked and caused this exact area of the floor to rot away. But upon getting closer, it became obvious this wasn't the case. The hole was about 5 feet across and went straight down, I don't know how far. With about 2 feet of space between the remaining floor and dirt, the hole just went down. This hole was there because it was made to be there. My husband and I looked at each other. My heart was racing so fast that I thought it would burst through my chest, and I said aloud to him while pointing, "What the hell is this? Why is this here?" I panicked. My breathing became more rapid and shallow. Nothing was making sense, and yet the thoughts that had been running in the background of my brain were all coming together like a jigsaw puzzle. Then we saw them. The worn and faded social security cards, a few old and molded over driver's licenses, just thrown around haphazardly. Checkbooks, credit cards, as if someone had emptied their purse or wallet in this room and then just disappeared into the hole. I was overcome with terror and dread. I had to get out of this house. My skin felt like static, as if my whole body had been taken over by the sensation of when your foot falls asleep. I had tears forming in my eyes, and my mind just told me to run. Without having to speak, Adam quickly took me by the arm, led us out the back door and into the light of day. We ran back down and mangled and tangled driveway to the car. Remembering back, I get the eerie feeling that we weren't the only two people in that house that day. Alive or dead. A side note, we never did call the police, and the house still stands there today. I don't know why there was a giant hole in the floor. We drove past it about a year later, and the large tree in the front yard had all its branches removed. All the windows had been boarded shut, and after doing some research, found out that the land that it sits on is now for sale. The house itself has been condemned. In the early 70s, my Aunt Sarah studied education at a college in a very conservative small town. Sarah lived on campus, while her boyfriend Jack, who eventually became my uncle, lived in a crappy house in a crappy part of the town off campus. Because the college was in an industrial town, they were surrounded by really big feedlots and beef packing plants or slaughterhouses that ran 24 hours a day, and among the blue-collar workforce were many undocumented workers that were paid under the table and lived off the grid. Part of my aunt's coursework for her degree was going into the local district and trying to help illegal immigrant families get resources for the kids, stuff like free lunches and prenatal care if the moms were pregnant. Mostly, the work was depressing. The families wanted the resources, but they didn't want to bring any attention to their undocumented status. It was just a disaster. Uncle Jack lived across the street from a crappy apartment building that housed several of these families, and often, groups of children would be playing outside. One day while visiting, my aunt noticed this kid, a 5 or 6 year old little girl, sitting alone on the apartment's crumbling balcony. After that, whenever she'd visit during the week, day or night, the girl would be there, but she was always gone on the weekends. There were a lot of people who lived in those units, so on the weekends, there'd be tons of kids of all ages running around, tearing crap up, generally being little jerks like kids do. They moved into the house in August, so it was blazing hot, and the sun didn't set until almost 10 at night, so the kids were always out running around. Any given weekday, though, that kid would be sitting there all by herself, just staring over at them, well into the evening. My aunt said at first she just thought it was sad that the kid didn't have anybody really looking after her. But then, it started turning to fall, and the days were getting shorter and colder. One night, my uncle was walking my aunt out to her car, and she remarked to him that the little girl wasn't out there. A relief, because it was getting so cold. But then, a car turned down the street with its brights on, and when the headlights hit the balcony of the apartment building, sure enough, the kid was still there. My aunt said she must have been wearing dark clothes because when the headlights passed over her, all they could really see was this very little pale face, the headlights washing away all of her features. She'd been there the entire time. They just hadn't seen her because it was so dark. Well, that was the turning point for my aunt. By now, she was into her internship with the district, and she was doing a lot of outreach. So one weekend afternoon, when it was still pretty nice outside, she and my uncle approached the families mingling outside. She asked about the little girl, but no one would talk to her. She said even the kids pretended to not be able to understand what she was saying. Winter came, and still the little girl could be seen on the balcony, appearing like she wasn't wearing a coat. At this point, my aunt decided to stage an intervention to get the kid a jacket and maybe even enroll her in school. So she sees the kid one morning and heads across the street and up the stairs that lead to the second level. But by the time she gets there, the kid is gone. My aunt didn't hear any footsteps. She didn't hear any doors closing. Nothing. My aunt figures it's the same thing from before. They're just scared of an old outsider. But now, she's more determined than ever because this kid clearly needs some resources. Well, that next week it snowed. So when the weekend comes, a bunch of the little jackals that were living across the street were outside stockpiling snowballs to throw at each other. My aunt has learned from the last time, so this time, she doesn't take my uncle, but she does take candy and a bunch of silver dollars. Now the older kids, they avoid her like the plague, but a couple of the little ones come over and my aunt starts asking about the little girl. The kids are way more interested in the candy and the silver dollars than the questions, and most of them refuse to answer, until one of them finally says, "Venka." The name of the child, my aunt presumes. She'd never heard of a name like that, but gives the little kid some of the candy and some of the money anyway, which eventually entices the older kids to come over and start talking to her. Until she starts to ask about Venka. The older kids completely clammed up, gathered up all the little ones, and in like 30 seconds, everyone was gone. One winter evening, when it was very dark, my aunt saw the kid. By now, it was absolutely freezing out. There had been an ice storm the night before, and that kid was still out there. Flipping out, my aunt headed over, fully intending to get the kid and call the cops, because it wasn't just neglect at this point, it was abuse. When she finally made it up the apartment building's icy stairs, The kid, once again, was gone, which finally got my aunt to freak out because there was no way a kid could have moved that fast on icy concrete, and she knows that none of the doors to any of the apartments were opened. Still, she pulled it together and decided to walk the length of the balcony just to make sure the kid wasn't really there. Reaching the midway point where the kid was always sitting, she saw, deep in the ice, these... she didn't know what to call them. They weren't footprints, because they weren't shaped like feet. Not even little feet. And they weren't just on top of the ice. They were all the way through it, down to the bare concrete. It was like the kid had been standing there during the entire ice storm the previous night, and the ice had built up around her feet. Terrified, my aunt tore ass off the balcony and down the stairs, managing to trip and take a spectacular chunk out of her shin in the process. She still has that scar there today. After making it to my uncle's house and saying what had happened, he and two of his roommates headed over to check it out, while she stayed back and had someone patch up her leg. After about 10 minutes, the guys came back and told her that, yeah, they saw the footprints, though none of them could come up with any kind of an explanation, and they tried to play it off, working out all of these different scenarios that seemed plausible. Like, maybe there had been some empty cups or something sitting there, and the kid kicked them off the ledge, and that's what made the weird footprints. They convinced her that if they went over and looked in the morning, they'd probably find some cups on the ground. And then, they said that maybe my aunt hadn't seen the kid at all. At this point, they'd all seen the kid, at least once. She was always over there. But they pointed out that they all got so used to seeing her that my aunt probably just saw a shadow and took it for granted that it was a kid. Which didn't make any sense if a kid had kicked over some cups, but whatever. After winter finals, my uncle and some of his roommates decided to throw a giant kegger before everyone headed home for Christmas. It was the first time my aunt had been back to the house since all of the stuff on the balcony happened. But everything now seemed fine. The little girl was nowhere to be seen. The party ends up being pretty low-key, with only my uncle, his roommates, and their girlfriends, and one of the roommates' sister, a girl named Marisol, was in attendance. The night wore on, and another ice storm began outside, causing the power to go out, and the roommates decided to light a fire in the fireplace. They were all fairly trashed at this point, and one of the roommates brought up the weird footprints, something they'd yet to speak of out loud. Finally, around the fire, my uncle and two of his roommates admitted that it was creepy as hell. He said, "I know it's not possible, but it looked like," began one of the guys, "a goat hoof or a pig hoof." My uncle said it was something that was standing there, whatever it was, appeared to have cloven feet. The entire energy in the room, according to my aunt, was still uneasy when the roommate who said it looked like a goat hoof turned and asked, "What's the girl's name again? Velma?" "Venka," my aunt corrected. My aunt says you could have heard a pin drop at this point, but eventually, someone changed the subject and everyone continued to drink and goof off. At some point, however, my aunt went into the kitchen and was followed by the girl Marisol, the roommate's sister. Alone in the kitchen, Marisol had a weird expression on her face and asked, "Did you say the girl's name was Venka?" And my aunt nodded, telling her, "Yeah, that's what the kids, you know, the regular kids across the street told me." Marisol nodded and didn't say anything for a while, but when my aunt turned to leave, Marisol put her hand on my aunt's arm and said, "It wasn't Venka. It was Venga. It's slang. It means come here in Spanish." And that's when Marisol told my aunt the story. It was the first year the district and the college tried the internship my aunt was participating in, and Marisol, participating in the same program, was stuck literally going door to door trying to find the families with kids that need to be enrolled in school. She got a hell of a lot farther than my aunt ever got because she spoke fluent Spanish. The family still didn't like her nosing around, but they would at least speak to her. Well, Marisol says she went to another crappy apartment building, not across the street from my uncle's rental, but close. While there, she saw all of these kids, including a little girl dressed in dark clothes, who appeared to be by herself. So, Marisol talked to the more friendly kids and their families, convincing them that they can qualify for several services, like going to school and it was a really good thing to be doing. Getting up to go, she asked about the little girl she saw outside. Upon mentioning her, an older woman, probably a grandmother or great-grandmother, crossed herself and shook her head. She told Marisol that what she saw wasn't a little girl. It was a bad spirit, and Marisol should forget she ever saw her. At the time, she figured that maybe the kid was illegal, or possibly stolen or sold to another family. It's sad, but it does happen. But then, when she tried to really think back to the girl's features, nothing came to mind. It was sort of blank, just a general impression of a girl in dark clothes. Well, over the weeks and months, Marisol started to eavesdrop, and more, she would hear about this Venga girl. Apparently, she was called that because she would always whisper, "Venga," and try to lead people off into the woods. Marisol wasn't clear on what supposedly happened to anyone who dared to follow her, and according to the conversation she overheard, all of the kids knew better than to go with her, or else they'd be beaten within an inch of their lives by a granny armed with a wooden spoon. Since then, she swore that she could catch glimpses of this kid in different places around town. By this point in the story, my aunt was super drunk and totally freaked out. Getting away from Marisol as quickly as she could, she informed my uncle that he needed to take her back to the dorm. Heading away from the apartment and by this wooded area, my uncle, either because of the ice storm or because he had been drinking for a while, ended up hitting the curb hard enough that the tire blew out. It being in the middle of the night and freezing, he left my aunt in the car and got out alone to change the tire by the light of a flare. That was the only light source he had. In the car, my aunt was terrified. The red light of the flare was bouncing off the ice and flashing everywhere. And there, in the woods, about 20 feet away, is the girl. The flare was bright enough for my aunt to get a good look at her face, except there wasn't one. The face was perfectly pale and featureless. No eyes, no nose, no mouth. It was just completely smooth. Even over the sound of the heater and the radio, my aunt swears she could hear the girl whispering, "Venga," to her, and she could see her crooking a finger towards her. This was the first time my aunt saw the girl's hands. They were bleeding, with long, cracked fingernails. And her feet, they weren't feet. They were like hooves. At this point, my uncle climbed back into the car, and my aunt pointing him to the girl, but she was gone. The next morning, as soon as the sun was up, they packed up and drove all the way home for the holidays. After that, my aunt refused to go back to the house, and they never saw the girl again. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives, some truly chilling tales. I love the one where the 9/11 phone call. That was pretty crazy, man. I mean, I know exactly what she's talking about when you're home alone and you kind of spooked out. You're living in a new place. You don't really feel that comfortable. And then, you know, you start getting these phone calls. And every time you answer it, it's the 911 operator. And they're like, did you just call us? And she's like, no, I didn't call her. And they're like, look, man, you got to quit playing around on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the sixth time you've done it. Now she starts hearing noises from the hallway bathroom. And she knows instantly in her head, if I try to call 911, they're not going to come now because they think I'm screwing around with
them. Yeah,
yeah. You know, so, and then later they found out that the woman that lived in that house was killed by her husband. and they found her body in that bathroom. I mean, pretty creepy stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty creepy.
All those stuff. Are disturbing. I mean, the whole, anything that, what is that movie? I remember it used to be, I can't remember the name of it now, but it was like a babysitter was getting phone calls and it ends up, she calls the cops, because it's inside the house.
Yeah.
Oh. That used to be an old, or an old like horror tale or just an old wives tale.
Urban legend and stuff, and they turned it into a movie. Actually, I think they've done it, they've turned it into a movie twice.
Have they really?
Yeah, I think there was an original version like back in the early 80s. And then there was a recent version just like a couple years ago. What the heck is the name of that? I know exactly what you're talking about.
I don't know, but that's kind of those things like that always makes me, it always makes me think about something like that or those. Of course, it's weird now because young kids won't be able to relate to having a home phone. You know, you're just like, what is this? Phone? No, I'm not answering that message. You know, something like that. Like, how are you going to text somebody to scare them? What are you going to tell them? Send them a picture of a knife? Oh, this is going to be stuck inside you.
Right. Like, yeah, I don't know.
That's it's not going to be scary like that. You know, I mean, it's just one of those, you're like, get out of here, loser, you know, and whatnot. But I don't know. The idea of, the idea of something like that taking place. I sit here and think about the idea of just like that whole 911 thing. And it's just, it's weird. It's just something that you really, I was hoping to actually have something strange happen on this trip. I mean, I'm driving along, looking down there in this swamp. Now, first of all, wherever we travel on this trip, my daughter, I mean, my daughter, she loves to, she's always like, hey, Pop, that looks awful squatchy. Now, mind you, she's fixing to be 17. She'll be 17 this Thursday. So this girl is a handful. But, yeah. She's always looks somebody. I mean, she loves to mess with me, but she also loves the stories. Like she loves the books that we get in. She reads the majority of those books. I'll bring her. I mean, she loves all that, but she loves it for the entertainment value of what this is. But she loves to give me. But anytime we see it all. So they were asking me all kinds of questions. So when we get into Florida, I have a vehicle full of people that are asking me about swamp ape, all this stuff. So as I'm explaining it to them, I mean, they really had a good time. But it's one of those things that always makes me wonder. I'm like, man, what if I had something like that really? You know, like I've told you not long ago, I told all y'all about hearing that voice and all that. I still don't know if I would be able to share something, though, that was really really crazy that happened to me.
Well, that's what I always say. If I really saw a Bigfoot, I don't know that I would ever disclose it because everybody would think, well, it's awfully convenient. The guys that talk about Bigfoot all the time happen to see one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So almost might be better that I haven't seen one. Of course, now everybody's going to be like, well, he probably really has seen one. He's just saying he doesn't see one.
Yeah. But, he hadn't seen one, folks. He hadn't seen one at all.
No, I get the same thing. No matter what family event happens, I mean, everybody in the family likes to gather around. Pull me aside and
tell a story.
Ask me questions.
Yeah.
And I get it. I'm the guy that's got my finger on the pulse of the paranormal. And
I'll listen to you. Brag much? Ooh, I got my finger on the pulse of the paranormal.
But so, like, you know, everybody's always like, well, did you see this?
Did you watch that finger?
Did you watch this? Did you see that? And I'm always like, no, no. And especially one of my uncles. Golly, that guy. He's deep in the ancient aliens and stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, he's constantly asking me stuff. And I love him to death, but I'm always like, no, you know, that came out a couple years ago that turned out that was not correct. And he's like, oh, really? You know, like, he's always, like, 6 years late to the game, it feels like. You know what I mean? Like, he'll come up with something. He'll be like, hey, man, you ever seen these Nazca lines? You ever heard of that? I'm like,
surprisingly enough,
they found those, like, in the 60s, you know. And it's always, have you ever heard of this Atacama baby? You know, and you're like, yeah. You ever heard of this crash called Roswell? It's pretty interesting. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, I know that.
Yeah.
But speaking of books, we're talking about your daughter likes to read a lot of the books that we get shipped here. Because we get tons of books shipped from the publishers. And thanks to you, I started reading War God.
What do you think, man?
By Graham Hancock. It is a breath of fresh air.
I'm glad you like it.
I recently talked to Cam. This was about 3 weeks ago. And I told him, hey, I don't remember what I was asking. Oh, that's what it was. I go, do you still have that series of books from Graham Hancock in like hardback or something? I would like to read those. And you said you didn't have them, like somebody had borrowed them already from you or something. And he was like, why, what's up? And I was like, you know what? I've been looking. I know we get hundreds of books sent here all the time, but I am so sick of reading about ghosts. I'm so sick of reading about UFOs, Bigfoot and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, not forever, but I need a break.
Yeah.
I want to read some fiction. I just want to read something that's pretty good. And you were like, you need to check these out. So I ordered all three.
And you love them.
And I'm almost finished with the first one in just like literally the first 4 days. It's fantastic. Now, if you're not familiar with Graham Hancock, you know, he writes, you know, books all the time about ancient civilizations.
If you're not familiar with Graham Hancock, put this on pause.
Yeah.
Do yourself a favor and go get familiar with him.
Right. Fingerprints of the Gods and Magicians of the Gods and stuff. Everybody pretty much knows who he is.
Yeah.
But he also, they may not know that he also writes fiction. Yes. And this is a fictional set of books. There's three, and it's about Cortez and him running into the Mayan culture and the battle that ensues in that. And it's very interesting because it's fiction, but it's also kind of loosely based on facts. So,
well, he wrote his first fictional book was, I believe, called Entangled, was what the very first one.
I thought that was the one he was talking about, like DMT and psychoactive drugs.
No, the one Entangled, I believe, was where it's supposed to be like a woman in present time and a woman in the past are like somehow mixed together, like
mind melding.
Yeah, like something along those lines.
Hmm.
I actually have that book. I've just not read that book because I think there's only a couple of Graham Hancock books that I don't have, but I did the same thing as you. When I first got War God, it took me 4 days. I read the whole thing, the whole first one. Then I had to wait for the year for the second one to come out. So when it comes out, that's whenever, you know, you jump on it, you burn through that one in a week.
Yeah, luckily I just started. So I'm kind of like the guy that just now started watching Game of Thrones and has binged watched all six seasons or whatever. So it is actually much better if you come across a true gem like that. So anyone out there that's looking for some good fiction and they kind of like ancient history, I would suggest War God by Graham Hancock. It's pretty cool. Let's talk about our sponsors real quick. Don't forget about our incredible sponsor, Gaia. Gaia is a video streaming service with over 7,000 titles, from self-help videos to yoga to meditation to seeking truth, films and all kinds of documentaries, including one-of-a-kind shows like Hidden Origins with Michael Tellinger, Open Minds with Regina Meredith, Wisdom Teachings with David Wilcock, Beyond Belief with George Norrie, the new Unearthing Nazca, and the all-new series False Flags with our friend, the D-Man himself, Richard Dolan. You can have access to all of this right now. They have multiple plans to choose from. If you sign up right now using our code, your first month will only be 99 cents. You can watch it anywhere from your desktop to your phone or tablet, but you need our code to get the hookup. So just go to Gaia.com/expandedperspectives. That's all one word, folks. Gaia.com/expandedperspectives. And also ZipRecruiter. Right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/expanded. And Dollar Shave Club. For a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of their Dr. Kava's Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. That's a $15 value for only $5. But you have to use the code, folks. Just go to DollarShaveClub.com/expanded. Cam, what do you got planned for your first week back from vacation?
I've got so much work to do.
You got to catch up. That always happens, right?
I've got so much work to do. Well, and like I told you whenever you and I was talking, I'm talking to Kyle. I'm on the water. The funny is work was emailing me and texting me and calling me and all that stuff. So I know how busy I'm going to be when I get back. So, yeah, I expected it. So it's just one of those deals. So, yeah, I'll just be trying to knock a bunch of that stuff out and see what we can get going on.
I'm
going to
have a kind of an easy week as far as work goes, but this is the last week before school starts for the brood. So they've got a lot of things that I promised that we would do before the summer was over. And so I'll be doing that. I know for a fact, tomorrow we're starting out by fishing.
Yes.
And they got several other things they want to go check out. They want to go to an arcade. And I think we might just go play some putt-putt. I don't know what
you're
going to
be busy.
I'm going to be pretty busy with them. But it's not too bad. I can't complain. I hope everybody out there has an incredible week. Don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite, folks. You can sign up by going to the website, expandedperspectives.com. Click on the tab and you can sign up. It's $5 a month. You get an additional show every Friday, as well as access to the entire back catalog for now. You can also email your stories, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 817-945-3828. And you can follow us on all forms of social media. For you elite members, we'll be speaking to you on Friday. For everybody else, have a good one. We'll talk to you next Monday. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.